This podcast is brought to you by DeMarini. Are you ready to join the uprising? More than 150 programs around the nation have, including back-to-back Division I and II national champions, Oregon State and Tampa, and Division III national champion Keene. Log on to DeMarini.com/DNation and check out the Voodoo Minus 3 to see why the SC3 alloy is the most powerful and durable performance alloy on the market. It gives you the pop you need to get along because chicks don't dig the ground ball. The uprising, coming to a ballpark near you. Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. It's the college-style podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with Aaron Fitt. Still getting settled in our new office. The podcast room is being set up today, Aaron. That's because there are interns afoot here at Baseball America. That's always an exciting time of year. So that means college is over for a lot of these classes are over for a lot of these colleges. Interns are here. That means the college baseball players can focus on the only thing that's really important in their lives. And that's the road to Omaha, Aaron. As it should be, everyone's focused 100% on college baseball. Not even we are focused 100% on college baseball, thanks to the draft. But exciting weekend. They're all exciting for us. But boy, this weekend, Aaron, I think we have to start the podcast off with
the series of the year.
The series of the year. We have to go back and put an effect on that so it echoes throughout eternity that this was the series of the year. Texas A&M and Nebraska. Two teams that we didn't even think were going to be the top. You know, we did have A&M ranked in the preseason. Nebraska, we did not even have pegged as a preseason regional team.
We debated them for the last slot of the Big 12 and ended up giving the nod wisely, John, to Kansas State.
So it's all Nate Tendring's fault, I'm going to say. We thought he'd be good, and he's hitting 250, and he's going to get drafted high, but that's a whole other story. But how about both these teams, Aaron, after watching this and following it, and just three dramatic games, my take on both these teams is they're both talented teams to an extent. There's not really a huge weakness on either of these teams, and they're both outstanding counterpunchers. When the other team makes a mistake, Nebraska or Texas A&M can really rush into that breach.
Yeah.
I think this weekend, this is just my impression, Nebraska's experience, they do have a lot of seniors who have been through a lot, and that experience really seemed like it paid off as they won this series at home in dramatic fashion.
I like your take, John. I think your analysis is pretty spot on. I do think that A&M for me is the more talented team. If we're talking about pure, you know, prospects and long-term potential, I do think that A&M has more talent on the roster. I think Nebraska's experience gives it an edge going forward. We kind of saw that this weekend. A&M, I mean, is still kind of young in the weekend rotation. You know, they've got freshmen starting on Friday and Saturday, and I think both these teams were exposed a little bit on the mound on Sunday in that doubleheader,
right.
A couple of slugfests. I don't think either of these teams is quite as strong on the mound maybe as some other contenders out there. You know, Travis Starling then again turned in a transcendent performance in that Friday 16-inning epic, going 8 scoreless innings, doubling his career-long outing. You know, they didn't have him available on Sunday, so that kind of was one reason maybe why their bullpen was exposed. Kyle Thibeault, though, not a good weekend at all, giving up a couple of leads. So that's, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. But, I think these are two very evenly matched teams. I think, like you said, they're both very opportunistic. Nebraska's MO really all year long has been they don't beat themselves.
Right.
And A&M is I think, one of the most high-octane teams out there, just the style of play that they use, always pushing the action, so much pressure. They
very
use
aggressive.
A lot of speed. They're so aggressive. I mean, I just think they're such a well-coached team, and this was a really, really fun series.
Well, these are two of the finalists in my mind for National Coach of the Year as well. I mean, that we're a long way from paring that list down, but you look at A&M and the way that they have shot toward the top of the Big 12, and you look at they've been there for a lot of the year. First series they've lost in an awful long time. And you look at Nebraska, again, a team that we did not even pick to win, to be in regionals, and to be basically a kind of a game and a half, I guess, back of A&M in the Big 12 race. And Nebraska looking as a team that's probably going to host a regional, could host a super regional, hasn't even lost 10 games yet. Just very, very impressive to see the job that Mike Anderson has done there. One of the last links to the era when Nebraska didn't give a damn about baseball, but they care an awful lot about it right now, and it's reflected in their team. Not a lot of movement at the top of the rankings because of that, Aaron. Georgia comes into the top 10 this week. Cal State Fullerton, I think Dave Serrano's done another great coaching job there at Fullerton. They've won 8 straight weekend series.
And I want to add to that, John. particularly how great of a job Serrano has done with the pitching staff there, which of course is
great point.
You know, I mean, that's where he built his reputation. But my goodness, the improvement we've seen from Jeff Kaplan and Corey Arbiso is just amazing to me. And those guys have both become really rocks for them in the weekend rotation. Daniel Rankin, the freshman's had his ups and downs a little bit, but
he's the most talented guy there. Yeah. But that doesn't mean a whole lot. He's the one who's doing it.
But I mean, really, like I think we were both worried about that pitching early in the year and going into the year. And, you know, as usual, Coach Serrano has just stabilized that thing and gotten the most out of his guys on the mound. It's very impressive. I think this offense is underrated and very, very good, I think. I really think it's a good balanced attack. I mean, maybe it's not the most powerful offense out there. They've got good speed, though. They've got good hitters, good college players, Komatsu and Fellhauer and Cologne, and all these guys are just very solid players. And the pitching staff, you know, is in my mind, is the part that is really overachieved a little
right.
bit.
Right. Well, it's classic, rule change or not, it's classic Titans. They take a dose like nobody else. 102 hit by pitches for this team. It's amazing. There are six guys. Nice addition there by John Mangum, trying to teach his 3-year-old to count anyway. Well, he's way better at it than I am. Six guys with double-digit hit by pitches. They've got 100 stolen bases as a team. It's a very aggressive. It's a classic Titan approach. And they've got guys like Fellhauer and Komatsu who can drive you in the middle of the lineup. But it's working. It's working for the Titans. And, you know, again, another team that was not ranked in the preseason top 25, now in the top 10. And it's just been an impressive season. Another big weekend series as we go down the top 25 real quick here, Aaron. Cal and Stanford. Boy, Cal's been a little up and down lately, but a very big up this weekend as the Cardinal comes down the rankings significantly. Down to 14, they've lost two straight weekend series.
Well, actually, they.
I'm sorry, two out of three.
This is the first weekend series they've lost.
I was last week. They were 2-3, but yeah. They won the weekend series last
right.
weekend. But it,
right.
It's a couple of straight weeks in a row where Stanford, they're stumbling here a little bit.
They are.
I think they're the weight to me of, well, A, Eric Davis in those four straight complete games. He's been a 5 or 6 inning pitcher ever since then. B, their bullpen's a little taxed because they just don't have pitching depth. All those midweek games, they keep losing, they keep staffing, and their bullpen's a little taxed, and they're just missing Jeremy Bleich.
They just don't have a lot of arms, and we're seeing the attrition now.
And that's the case with a lot of teams this time of year. And to me, Stanford really needs Jeremy Bleich back, but he's only made 5 starts and hasn't pitched in 6 or 7 weeks. So how can you expect him to come back and be strong when he hasn't pitched in basically 2 months? So I think right now you have to give Cal the edge.
And conversely, John, Cal getting better pitching performances this weekend than it has gotten lately from Chad Bennigsen.
Yep.
A huge outing for Tyson Ross against a very left-handed leaning lineup, like you pointed out in our top 25 meeting today, John. Ross, who doesn't really have a great changeup to attack those left-handed hitters. Very impressive outing for him, I think. You know, so that's a big couple of wins and a very encouraging stretch here for Cal now, which has won 3 of his last 4 weekend series, even though they were swept at Arizona State. They have won series against Arizona last weekend, and then
yep.
a pretty solid Washington team a few weeks back. So,
third-place team in the Pac-10 right now.
So I think people who are questioning whether Cal would fade in Pac-10 play, especially down the stretch where they had a very tough closing stretch in the Pacific 10 Conference. I think they're answering the bell. I really think
Absolutely.
These last 2 weeks have solidified their status as at least a top 2 seed in a region.
Yeah, I think so. I think Cal's going to be probably a 2 seed in a regional that goes somewhere and you don't want to play them. You know,
right.
You're not going to really want to play Cal.
Because that offense for me, John, might be the best offense on the West Coast outside Tempe.
It's right there. It's right there. And they've got a great 1-2 punch in the middle with Cooper and Josh Satin. I got a Mark DeRosa comp from a scout on Josh Satin. That's pretty good. That's an offensive second baseman who could also maybe play some outfield for you. He's not quite as athletic, I think, as Mark DeRosa, who was a quarterback at Penn. But this is a team that can really hit.
And you know what else is Charlie Cutler has started to come along. He's getting some big hits for them. And I like a couple of those sophomores. They've got Jeff Coburnus and of course, in the outfield, Brett Jackson.
You right. Know, no, you're on it.
You know, those guys are very talented. And that's a very good club.
Speaking of very good clubs, right now, the Southeastern Conference's best team is obviously Georgia. They've been from start to finish. They win the head-to-head series with Vanderbilt this weekend. Huge kudos to Dave Perno and the Bulldogs. But how about the LSU Tigers? Paul Mainieri,
yeah,
sending out Alex Box Stadium in style. They've won 12 straight games. They sweep Mississippi State this weekend. That's not necessarily news. In Ron Polk's final season, at Mississippi State at least, The Bulldogs are awful, 20-32, 7-20 in the league. But LSU now leaping to the top of the SEC's Western Division, leaping up to 16 in our rankings. Aaron, not only have they put themselves into a regional, LSU's going to host.
They are going to host. And then that's the thing is by setting out Alex Box in style here in the regular season,
yep.
they'll get another chance to send that stadium out in the postseason because they're red hot right now, John. And that those last three weekends is just so impressive. Sweeping three straight conference series for the first time since 1991.
It's amazing.
They've won 12 straight for the first time since 2000. Both those years, John, were national championship teams for the Tigers.
Indeed.
So, I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship this year, but they're much improved from where they've been the last couple of years. That's for sure.
And here's the thing that makes you just tip your cap to Pulmonary. They're much improved from where they were 3 months ago.
Yeah.
This team has gotten a lot better during the season. I do think part of it was playing in the SEC where there's a lot of parity. There's not a lot of separation among those teams. But this team has gotten better. They're much more offensive than they were last year. They have much more power. Not just Matt Clark, but Blake Dean has been, to me, the guy.
Yeah.
It's the last couple of years. This guy's been their best hitter now for 2 years. And you always look at their stats, and this is the guy always at the top, and he's just a steady hitter. And I just think, again, you have to give Pulmonary the credit. He's developed a bullpen. He platoons guys. He's not afraid to make a lineup move like you wrote about in the weekend preview, or was it three strikes a couple weeks ago? Sean Ochinco. Here's Sean Ochinco. He was the number two catcher at Yarmouth Dennis last summer, behind Buster Posey, but ahead of Jason Castro of Stanford. Yeah, his presence basically made Jason Castro a first-base left fielder. Castro's going to go in the first round now this year as a catcher. So Ochinco's not chopped liver, but he had a disappointing season, and Monari was not afraid to make that lineup move. And the team's gotten better, and obviously Ochinco's not causing any chemistry issues, or else they wouldn't be on this winning streak if you had a divided clubhouse. It's impressive. He's made the team better. He's handled his players, not all of whom are quote-unquote his players. He walked into a tough situation, a lot of pressure, and he also was on this NCAA committee. I think you got to give Pulmonary a lot of credit for juggling all those balls in the air and figuring things out and getting this team in a winning direction.
Another strong candidate, I think, for Coach of the Year there, John.
And he's never won it.
And he's never won it. And I'll tell you, this is, like you said, an incredible coaching job. And you know what? I'm not terribly surprised because he's certainly one of the most likable people in college baseball. And
no
if
doubt.
You can't play for Pulmonary, then there's something wrong with you.
No, and he's a baseball man's baseball man. His dad, Denny Mineri, a longtime junior college coach in South Florida, has done a lot of scouting. Pulmonary is probably best friend in the world, probably Jim Henry, the GM of the Cubs. Paul's connected. He knows the game inside out, and he's nice. I mean, from a media standpoint, we love Pulmonary, but I just think if you look at the track record, he won actually at Air Force, which is impossible to do.
Yeah.
He made Notre Dame a Caldwell Series team, and now he's at LSU, and I think he's going to make LSU a Caldwell Series team too. So, and only one team new to the rankings, that would be Tulane at 25.
Let's talk, John, a little bit about the deliberations for that last spot. And you know,
tough.
I was saying, John, in the meeting today that I really wanted to bring in five teams. I thought there were five teams that were worthy, but everybody in the back half of the rankings won their series, so you can't just arbitrarily bring in the Georgia Techs and the UNC Wilmingtons, who I think are deserving. But Georgia Tech, UNC Wilmingtons, and New Orleans, to me, are all very deserving of top 25 consideration. Southern Miss as well. I think those are five teams, along with Tulane, that really had a strong case. And
South Carolina didn't have a strong case, but we bounced them all the way from 17. And that's not easy to do, but this is a team that's lost 4 to 5 series on the road and has been swept in three of them.
It's amazing.
I mean, South Carolina just fall on its face. There's no other way to put it. They're
not going to host a regional at Sarge Fry.
I was say 2 weeks ago, you looked at South Carolina and said, you know, if they win these next three series, their last three series, they don't just win. They don't just host. They're in the talk for a top eight national seed. They could have been the second or third team in the SEC. They played a good non-conference schedule, better than most SEC teams. You looked at South Carolina and said, yeah, if they're top eight national seed, I could buy that. Now they're looking at a three seed. I mean, they really are looking at falling that far. I mean, I think they're going to be a two, but they better start winning some games.
Yeah.
They're not winning games right now. That's the bottom line when it comes down to.
This was very surprising to me. And you know, I thought the LSU weekend was surprising too, but my goodness, I mean, being swept by Arkansas, you know, I mean, it's just a must-win series. You know, it's Arkansas had its ups and downs. They lost the series at home last weekend against Alabama.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you would have told me that they would sweep South Carolina the very next weekend, I would looked at you like you had three heads. So, I mean, I just think that this is – the SEC is really hard to figure. I think all we know about this league so far is that Georgia is really good.
I think that's what we know.
After that, I don't think we know anything. We know LSU's hot.
Yeah.
We don't really know how good they are.
I agree.
I mean, we know that Vanderbilt is talented and experienced, but...
I think we know that Georgia is the best team in the SEC. Everything else is a question mark. And that brings us to our regional discussion, Aaron, because that's what really matters.
Right.
And we went, after our meeting, Aaron and I went through all the conference schedules and went through some RPIs. And, you know, this was good, actually, to me, Aaron, because you go through to try to do a regional projection. And usually when you do it, you get to like 52 teams or 58 teams. You don't get 64 the first time through. We got to 62 the first time through. I think there's, with all the parity, and we haven't gotten the conference tournaments yet, so that's obviously going to throw some wrenches in. But we went through the first time and got to 62. It's pretty easy to pick our bubble teams after that at 64. I think that there's some, the choices now are looking easier. I think the field of 64 is starting to take shape. And one of the parts of that is the Southeastern Conference was a couple weeks ago looked like a six-bid league again. What was it, five bids last year, or was it six?
Five bids last year.
And so it was looking a couple weeks ago like maybe a six-bid league. Right now it's looking like eight and possibly tying its own record of nine. I think nine is possible. I don't think you're quite there with me.
There's a major vacuum out there. When you look
that
at,
makes
for
sucking
example,
sound, as Ross Perot would say.
Exactly. Thank you. The Big Ten got three last year. They're going to get one this year.
That is not going to happen. The Big Ten is a one-bid league unless someone else wins the tournament, which is unlikely.
The Sun Belt got three last year. I think it's a one-bid league right now. I mean, unless somebody upsets New Orleans in the conference tournament, I think New Orleans will get in as an at-large. But I don't think Troy's got a very good case. Then again, I didn't think they had a great case last year when they got in. So
Troy and Louisiana Monroe both have a shot, but it's an outside shot. And
Monroe's RPI is sinking
fast. It's
87.
They've
lost a bunch of series in a row now. I don't think Louisiana Monroe is a very strong at-large candidate.
In the words of George Costanza, they're backing up. I won't do the beep.
The Big East. I'm just going to keep going here.
Please.
The Big East. Last year was a three-bid league. I think that they could get two this year, but Notre Dame is on the bubble. I mean, they're not a lock as a number two seed as the number two team rather in the league because their RPI is in the 70s, I believe. So
yeah, it's not a and Cincinnati and a big series loss for Louisville this weekend. Louisville's 59 in the RPI. Louisville's got a shot. But they're tied for fourth in the league now.
I don't think that's going to get it done.
They just lost this weekend series. After winning eight in a row, they lost the last two games of that West Virginia series. That, to me, is really going to hurt. I thought Louisville was in the hunt here, but they're kind of not. I think they've fallen off the hunt. There's a chance that you get three Big East. I think it's much more likely that you get two. Whether St. John's,
I think there's almost no chance you get three Big East teams, and I think it's more likely that you get one from the Big East than you get three.
I would probably agree with you on that. So
the point though, John, is that all these leagues that had three last year are not going to get that many this year. That means that power conferences like the SEC will step in. And here's the other thing: is the ACC with Clemson fading is only going to get, I guess, Florida State, Virginia, North Carolina, Miami, and Georgia Tech, probably, and NC State.
NC State.
So that's a six-bid league in the ACC.
That's a big one to mention, because the ACC almost every year is a seven-bid league, and in many years it's an eight-bid league. In this configuration that the ACC is in, it's usually going to be a seven- or eight-bid league.
Right.
But Wake Forest and Clemson are down this year. Wake Forest, Duke, if you believed in Duke, and you thought, if Duke made the ACC tournament and had maybe a couple wins there, they look like they have a lot of wins, but they just got swept at Wake Forest. They sent out Hook Stadium. Kudos to Ryan Johnson and all the Wake Forest alumni who played at Hook Stadium, but they're moving on to the Ernie Shore era at Wake Forest. But there's no way Wake Forest or Clemson, in my mind, get in. Clemson's 26-25-1, and Wake Forest is a losing record.
Clemson had to. They had three series left. We figured they probably would lose to Florida State, but I think they needed
didn't
to win
they get
one
swept,
of those games.
Right.
They couldn't get swept at home. Then they absolutely had to win and probably even sweep Georgia Tech. They lost two out of three. Clemson's done. Stick a fork in them. The 21-year regional streak is over. Really an incredibly disappointing season for the Tigers.
And they have one last chance, because they are going to make the ACC tournament.
Yeah, they got to win the ACC tournament.
They're the eighth seed right now. And they've got a couple game lead here on Duke, so that tie at Duke may not come back to haunt them too much. Duke's at Virginia Tech next week, and I suppose if Duke sweeps, even if they sweep, they're only 11-17. Clemson's 11-18, so I guess they would squeak in ahead of Clemson. So Clemson's hoping for Virginia Tech to win a game. That's where Clemson's season is right now.
That's how far they've fallen.
that's an indication that you've fallen pretty far, because Virginia Tech is 21-30, 5-22. They just beat Miami once this weekend.
Right.
But I think you hit it the nail on the head. So here's our bubble teams, basically, Aaron, to try to get through the college podcast a little bit quicker. It's a Baseball America podcast. Aaron Fitt, John Manuel. We're saying ACC is six, and I don't even think there's a bubble team. The Big 12 is probably five. Baylor's on the bubble. Baylor could be your sixth Big 12
team. I don't think they've got a strong case at all. Right now, for me, you know, the only thing they've got going for them is their name recognition, because they don't have a lot of quality wins. They've not played well down the stretch. They have nothing going for them in my mind. They should not get in unless they make a serious run in the Big 12 tournament.
How do you really feel about it?
Well, I mean, you know, this is a team that I had high expectations for in the preseason, and they've just flat out been very disappointing.
Yeah.
And there's no other way to put it.
Here's the Big West is going to be a tough league. Fullerton's in. Long Beach, Irvine, Santa Barbara, Davis, those four teams, I think three of those teams will
Fullerton
get in.
I think Fullerton and Irvine certainly Irvine will get in.
Absolutely.
Obviously. I think Long Beach, with its RPI, with its conference record, I mean, they're in third place in the league. Long Beach, with their top 25 record, they're in.
I think so.
I can't imagine Long Beach.
Davis just spit the bit a little bit this weekend.
They
lost two out of three to Riverside. Riverside is the crazy team in all this. They're 12-6 in the league, 18-27 overall. They can only get a bid if they win the league outright.
Yep.
But they could win the league outright.
They're at
UC Santa Barbara, and they're home to Cal Poly. They win five out of those six games, or they sweep. They have a chance to tie Fullerton or surpass Fullerton for the league championship.
What's Fullerton got down the stretch here, John? Because right now
Fullerton has one more conference series. Fullerton's at San Diego State, and they're at home to San Diego State, and they're at Long Beach. So you know they're going to get a loss on Friday to Stephen Strasburg. That may be going out on a limb, but Stephen Strasburg's
not a conference loss, though.
Right, Stephen Strasburg's the best player in the country right now. It's not even close.
Yeah,
0.63 ERA in the Mountain West. The previous league record is 1.12. I mean, he's Bob Gibson. It's ridiculous
it's
how
amazing.
Good this guy is. He's Mark Pryor with a shoulder that's still connected. It's amazing. But that's so the Big West has got bubble teams. Conference USA, Houston getting swept by Rice. Houston's on the bubble. It's a really weird year, as we've talked about with Houston.
I'm sorry, John, to back up to the Big West for a second. I do think Davis still has a shot. They fortunately for them, they've got Irvine at home this weekend.
They got to win
must win series. And then I think they've got a fairly winnable road series to close out the slate. So
I believe that's I thought it was at Cal Poly. It might be. Let's look it up. That's the beauty of the interweb. They're
at
Northridge,
right.
Which is very winnable. So they've got to win, in my mind, five out of those six games. They've got to win two out of three against Irvine, and they got to sweep Northridge.
I agree.
That will help Davis. And like we talked about with Davis, this is their window of opportunity. It's a very veteran club. But the other bubble teams in our minds, the Missouri Valley and the Mountain West Conference is probably one bid leagues, but Missouri State, the Valley, or either New Mexico or San Diego State in the Mountain West. If San Diego State were to win that series against Fullerton, that would certainly augment the Aztecs' case of, we have a lot of good wins.
I think they almost have to win that series, but if they do, they've got a decent shot.
Yeah, and then the Pac-10. Can the Pac-10 ever be a six-bid league? Usually it's a four-bid league, which, you know, that is a crime. But Arizona State's in, Stanford's in. I think Cal after this weekend is for sure in.
Right.
I think then you got really four to make two, basically, in my mind.
I think Oregon State right now has played its way in. They won that series against UCLA. They've got a high RPI. Yeah, their overall record is, you know, a little too close
19,
to 500
yeah.
for comfort. But the Beavers are going to get in.
Plus two.
That's
for the
four.
Joe Morgan, whether it was advertent or inadvertent comfort, plus two. So Oregon State's finishing up with at USC, and they got Pacific. Utah Valley State, they're going to pad
their record
with those wins against Utah Valley State and Pacific. That should be four or five wins right there.
They could get back to being a two seed,
but they have to go all the way. They have to go to Southern Cal.
Yep.
It's conceivable they could lose two out of three to Southern Cal, be a 12-12 team. They're going to get in, but the real question to me is the rest of that league. What happens in the rest of that league? I think UCLA's playing its way out, 25-23, just not very good. Washington State losing a series to Washington this weekend. That hurts the league, in my opinion, because Washington State's RPI is so much higher than UW's. The Huskies, UW, how the ring look? Well, UW is third in the Pac-10 right now. Can Washington get an at-large bid with an RPI in the 80s right now, Aaron?
No.
I think Stein's point to no on my Magic 8-Ball.
But here's the thing, though, for Washington is – You know, they got a chance to prove to people that they're a regional team with these last 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
At Arizona State, home against Stanford. If they're a team that we should look at, you know, they'll win at least one of those series. You know, and their RPI will rise accordingly.
I wonder what their RPI would do if they went 3-3. Because I think best case scenario is they go 3-3 in those games.
Yeah.
That would put them at 13-11 in the league. 34, 35 wins overall.
Realistically, I cannot possibly imagine them going to Arizona State and winning that series. I just don't think there's any way that happens.
No, I don't think so either.
I think they'll be lucky to win one game.
You know, they're only 2 games back of Arizona State in the league.
Yep.
What if they were to win that? They win that series. Say they go sweep that series. They're in first place in the Pac-10. How crazy would that be?
That would be
without Tim Lincecum.
I will eat my hat if that happens, John, right here on the College Podcast.
Do you eat that St. Patrick's Day green Arizona State hat? Is that the one? Specifically, you should eat that hat, I believe.
There you go.
But to me, the Pac-10 should be a 6-bid league, but the way things are shaping up, it's going to be a 5-bid league. And the SEC, 8 or 9, I think the SEC is going to be a 9-bid league. Arkansas's got an RPI in the 21 range.
I beg to differ. I still think the SEC will only get 8.
The big team that could be left out, I think, for you is Alabama, right?
Alabama or Arkansas. I think you got to make the SEC tournament to get in. I do. I don't know if, you know, I know
that should
I
be a rule, but
it's
not.
Sometimes they've gone 9 from the, you know, that doesn't always happen. But I think this year it will. I don't think that the 9th team in the SEC gets in.
I mean, the one thing that Alabama kind of has in its favor, if it comes down to them, an independent Dallas Baptist. They did beat Dallas Baptist once this year. But they also got swept by New Orleans. If New Orleans doesn't win the Sun Belt and they're an at-large team, their RPI is higher, they won their league in the regular season, and they played head-to-head at Alabama, and the Privateers won both of those. But in Alabama's favor is that it's playing pretty well of late.
Played well down the stretch.
If they have to be head-to-head them versus Arkansas, yeah, Arkansas's RPI is better, but Alabama went to Arkansas just 2 weeks ago, you know, last weekend, not this past weekend, and won 2 out of 3. So they're the hot team. They have won 4 straight conference series, Florida, Arkansas, Auburn, and Mississippi State. It's pretty impressive. So Alabama, to me, they have
Jim
the lowest RPI.
Give staff credit for sure.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's one of the most talented teams they've had there, Rick.
I don't think so either. And one of their biggest name player, probably, in terms of talent, Myers Quigley, has not gotten the job. He's been far more disappointing than his high school resume said he would be. But all that said, to me, Alabama's got to go to Georgia and win a game. If they get swept in that series and they're 14-16 in the league, their RPI is going to probably still be in those 50s. It's going to be a tough case to make to bring a team in that like that. But I think the SEC is going to be a 9-bid league, Aaron, and that's a testament to that league and the depth of that league. And the other bubble league that you mentioned, the Sun Belt. So we're saying 2 out of the SoCon as well, West Coast 2. I think you can get to 64, in other words. To me, there's a little bit still to be decided in the last couple weeks with the last week of the regular season and then a lot of conference tournaments. But I think, Aaron, the field of 64 is starting to take some shape.
That's actually a good thing. I think a lot of things started to crystallize this weekend. I think some of the contenders and the pretenders are separating, and I think we've got a much better idea going forward here. I mean, we know certainly what certain teams have to do if they want to get in.
I think we both got depressed when we looked at the minute counter on the garage band, and it's in the almost 30 minutes long on the podcast. So you get carried away when you're having fun, Aaron. So next week we'll be back with another college podcast. The regular season will be over for most leagues. We'll begin in the conference tournaments. Should be an awful lot of fun, and we'll be here to talk about it. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Thanks for tuning in again to a Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.